space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise, its 5-year mission to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to combat aliens who've had a lot more money spent on their costumes than the tacky aliens you get on Doctor Who, and to boldly go where no man has gone before. Ken Dodd's wallet. Captain James T. Kirk, Commander USS Enterprise. The more observant of you will have noticed that I, like the rest of the crew, am now able to pronounce correctly names with a K in them, much to my relief, and especially to the relief of Lieutenant Will Banker. Captain's Albert, Stardate 4200...
Captain.
What is it, Captain's Log?
I would like to clarify something I said to you last week when there was a little confusion. With me thinking you were talking to me, Captain's Log, when you were actually saying Captain's Log, which resulted in my suggesting that as my name is Captain Albert's Log, it might in future be a good idea to say Captain Albert.
Yes, I remember.
Well, I meant call me Captain Albert, not call your log Captain Albert.
Ah. However, I have now grown used to the notion, and I rather like the idea of having a Captain's Albert.
But I don't like it, Captain Kirk. I am covered all over with your writing. You've written ballpoint entries all over my body. I've got a report of a meteorite storm written on my chest, a report of our reconnaissance of the planet Zardov on my stomach, and God knows what report you wrote on my behind last night.
A moon report. To be precise, a report on the dark side of the moon on your left buttock, and a report on the light side of the moon on your right buttock. Which reminds me, Captain Zlag, when I wrote that report, you were standing at ease. So I would appreciate it if you always stood that way in future. Because if you stand to attention, you cut off the ends and beginnings of my sentences. And it doesn't make sense.
But it doesn't make very much sense to use me as a logbook either, does it? You nim-nim. But I just want you to know that I am not at all happy about the situation, Captain Kirk. I am not happy with you writing on me with your ballpoint. I am not happy with your rubbing out your mistakes. And I am most definitely not happy about where you keep your pencil. In fact, where you keep your pencil is giving me a lot of trouble.
Well, simply take the pencil out when you need to blow your nose, Captain Zlar. And now, with your permission, Captain's Albert, Stardate 4222.7. Our mission, to steer well clear of our mother planet Earth, since it seems that if we get too near it, whatever mission we are on is interrupted by a radio show, which is obviously causing us some concern. Another thing that concerns me is Mr. Spock, for each day my colleague seems to grow more morose, more withdrawn. Could it be that he is pining for the company of one of his own, a Vulcan, particularly the company of a female Vulcan?
Ha! That thinking is completely illogical, Jim. For a Vulcan has no interest in sex whatsoever. Except, of course, as a means of procreation.
Spock?
Yes?
Don't be such a prat. You don't seriously expect me to believe that you have no interest in sex, do you? For as you rightly point out, you are a Vulcan. And does not a derivative of the word Vulcan, the word vulcanized, conjure up a vision of a woman who has been completely satisfied, positively vulcanized?
Jim, the word vulcanized means...
You don't have to explain to me what the word vulcanized means, my dear Spock. I can quote the dictionary definition precisely. To vulcanize, to use a rubber substance, to...
In English, yes, vulcanized does mean that in English, but not in the Vulcan language. In my language, the word Vulcan means happy.
Well, of course it does. I mean, why wouldn't a Vulcan be happy if he were vulcanizing women all day?
They don't. Nor do I. Never. The fact is, Jim, that Vulcans only ever participate in the sexual act for breeding purposes only. Indeed, Vulcan couples, in case they should be tempted by the proximity of each other when in bed, must, before getting into bed, smear their bodies from the neck down with grease, thus making it extremely difficult for them to make love to each other.
Smear their bodies with grease from the neck down?
Yes.
So that's why you Vulcans have big pointed ears, to hang on to.
For the last time, Jim, I do not...
Captain Kirk! Captain Kirk, there's something I want you to have a look at, look you. Are you up there on the bridge, boy?
Yes, what is it, Scotty?
No, it isn't Scotty, sir. This is Scotty's assistant, Griff Rees Television Commercial.
Sorry, Griff. You Englishmen all sound the same to me. What is it you want me to look at?
Well, switch on the viewing screen and look you. There's something I don't like to look on.
Activate the viewing screen, Uhura.
Viewing screen activated.
This is amazing. An explanation, Mr. Spock?
It would appear to be some sort of hideous, disembodied head, Jim.
It is indeed a most peculiar life form. I would say it could be human were it not for the exceptional size of the teeth.
And the long, scrawny neck.
And the...
Jim, I believe it is about to speak.
I wonder what the truly spine-chilling visage is about to say.
Hello again. And welcome to another edition of That's Life. And tonight we've got something really special lined up for you. A dog that can fart, keep your sunny side up. But first, an explanation as to why it is necessary to have five presenters on That's Life when one would be sufficient.
And the reason we have five presenters...
is so that each of us in turn...
can speak part of a sentence...
before handing over to the next presenter.
To carry on with the sentence.
Actually, in the next series...
we are hoping to improve our technique...
by speaking even fewer words...
before handing over to the next presenter.
While still maintaining the principle...
that it is Esther...
who always completes the sentence.
Because, after all...
she is...
the boss.
And as the boss of That's Life...
as well as the star of That's Life...
Esther, quite naturally, is...
entitled...
to...
have...
the...
last word. Now... I want you all to look at this. A bra which was sent in by one of our viewers. Can you see what's wrong with it? That's right, it's got three cuts. Now, it was bought by Mrs. Emily Wassett by mail order from Charlie's Bras as a special offer.
Special offer? We've heard of 50% off, but 50% on?
So, Mrs. Wassett phoned Charlie's Bras to complain about it.
And the conversation went like this.
I would like to complain about this bra you sent me.
It's a perfectly good bra, equipped, as are all our bras, with four cups.
Four cups?
Yes, our bras are specially designed for twins who are very close to each other.
But the bra you sent to me has three cups.
Ah, you see, you have the mathematical version of our twin bra.
Mathematical?
Three carry one.
And with that, Charlie put the phone down.
Unable to get any satisfaction, Mrs. Wassock turned to us.
To help with the case of the three-cupped bra.
So now here's our intrepid Gavin Campbell to keep us abreast of the latest development.
First, I telephoned Charlie at his office in Birmingham, and he said...
Good morning, North Thames Gas Board.
Isn't that Charlie's Bras?
No, you must have the wrong number.
But Gavin was so convinced that he had in fact dialed the right number that he phoned British Telecom to complain about the bad service, and they said...
Hello, Heathrow Airport.
At this point, it became obvious that this was going to be a bigger job than we at first thought. So I instructed Gavin to enlist the aid of Doc Cox.
So I phoned Doc Cox, and he said...
North Thames Gas Board.
I'm phoning Doc Cox. Isn't that he?
Yes, Doc Cox here.
Then why did you say you were the North Thames Gas Board?
I was rehearsing for the piece we're doing about the woman who bought a bra with three cups.
There won't be a piece unless we can get through to Charlie's Bras. I've tried ringing them, but I got the North Thames Gas Board.
No, that was me pretending to be the North Thames Gas Board for the piece.
No, no, I mean originally. Originally I got the North Thames Gas Board. And I'm sure I dialed the correct number.
Leave it with me. I'll complain to British Telecom.
So Doc phoned British Telecom and they said...
Hello, Heathrow Airport.
So we were getting nowhere far, so I told Gavin to enlist the aid of Grant Fainham.
So I phoned Grant and he said...
Hello, Heathrow Airport.
On hearing this, I naturally assumed that it was Grant rehearsing for the piece we're doing about the woman who bought a bra with three cups. So I told him Esther wanted him to help us, and he said...
What are you talking about? This is Heathrow Airport.
And rang off. It turned out that I'd been put through to the real Heathrow Airport. So I phoned British Telecom to complain about the bad service. And they said...
Hello, Heathrow Airport.
Oh, not again. I don't want Heathrow Airport. I want...
You haven't got them. It's me, Grant Bainham, rehearsing for the piece we're doing about the woman...
Well, to cut a long story short, I confronted Charlie in person. And in exchange for Mrs. Wassock's three-cup bra, he gave me a... four-cup bra. I said, I don't want a four-cup bra. I want a normal bra for a normal woman. He said...
That is a normal bra.
But it has four cups. And not to mince words, Charlie, what woman has four tits?
You do.
I do?
Yes. Gavin Campbell, Doc Cox, Adrian Milton.
And after what you've just heard, I couldn't really argue with him, could I? And now we move from Esther's four little boys to Mr. and Mrs. Smith's five little boys, who feature in this radio archive recording. Listen.
How do you do, everyone? This is Mr. and Mrs. Smith's five little boys, who are saying to you...
Hello!
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 And now, listen to this and tell me what it means.
Hello!
Hello!
That's right. It means that two of the five little boys have snuffed it. It also means, because as everyone knows, hello, hello, hello is a term used by policemen, that it is on the subject of policemen that we are now going to turn our spotlight.
Oi, put that light out. Can't you see I'm making a delicate inquiry? Now talk, chummy.
The good old British Bobby, ready to step in to cope with any emergency at the drop of a hat. Or is he? Well, just take a look at what our hidden cameras revealed recently.
Then turn right into Albion Street and the college is on your left.
Oh, thank you very much indeed, officer.
Not at all, madam. Just doing my job.
Officer! Officer! Officer, quick! Quick! The NatWest Bank has been robbed.
The NatWest? Oh, yes, yes. Go back the way you've just come. Take the first turning on the right, then the first turning on the left. That's Broom Street. You go down Broom Street until you come to Cannon Street. Turn right up Cannon Street until you come to the Red Lion. That's the Tetley's house, you know. Oh, yes. Yes, now you turn right there, and the NatWest Bank is about 50 yards further on, just past the traffic light.
Officer, it's being robbed. The NatWest Bank is being robbed.
And you want to watch the robbery. Well, yes, they can be very exciting things. You know. Well, yes, that set of directions I've given you will get you there, but if you're not in any hurry, there is an alternative way.
I don't want to go to the NatWest Bank. I've just come from the NatWest Bank.
Oh. Which way did you come? Via Broom Street or via Corporation?
I don't know. I just saw the bank being robbed and ran until I found a policeman.
Well, did you notice any traffic lights?
I told you I didn't have, yes. Yes, I think I did see some traffic lights.
Ah, well, then you came via Broom Street. There aren't any traffic lights on Corporation Street, you see.
Officer, what about the bank? What about the NatWest Bank?
No, no, there aren't any traffic lights in the NatWest Bank. No, 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 they only have traffic lights on the roads, you see, so it's the...
For God's sake, man, don't you care? The bank is being robbed! The NatWest Bank is being robbed!
The NatWest Bank is being robbed, you say? Oh, dear.
At last...
Well, I'm sorry, sir. I've been giving you the directions for Barclays, you see.
Now, I don't know what you at home thought about the performance of our friend Plod there, but we in the That's Life team were absolutely horrified.
So we decided to keep an eye on him.
And caught up with him at the next local assizes.
Where he was giving evidence. Thank you, Constable. You may step down.
Thank you, sir. Which way would you like me to leave? Via the well of the court, left, past the dock, up the steps, turn right at the top, past the jury box, left...
Just get out of it, man.
Very good, sir. Right, sir. Getting out of it now, sir. Right, I'm right, sir.
I would now like to put the defendant on the stand, my lad.
Call Arnold Penns.
We present the 17th minute of the show. And tonight, a mystery guest will instruct us in the art of acting. And in order to demonstrate her own acting ability, our guest would like everyone in the studio audience to close their eyes, as the majority of you will have only seen her previously when she's been acting, and she is quite convinced that when she talks to us in her normal voice, that you will be unable to recognize her. So, if you will all kindly close your eyes, right, ladies and gentlemen, our mystery guest!
Oh, hi.
Howdy, how, everybody. Oh, you haven't got a clue who I am, have you? Right, you can open your eyes now, yes. It's me, Sue Pollard. Now, you've all seen me acting the part of Peggy in Howdy High, haven't you? Well, when I do Peggy, I use a completely different voice to my own, you see. Listen, I'll show you. Right, this is me as Peggy. Now is the time for all good men to come to the aid of the party. And this is my normal Sue Pollard voice, right? Now is the time for all good men to come to the aid of the party. It's completely different, you see, isn't it? Did you notice? Right. And by the way, if there are any good men listening, I'm the party I want you to come to the aid of. Another way you can tell whether or not I'm acting is by noticing how I'm dressed. You see, for example, right now I'm dressed in a leopard skin midi dress over a magenta leather boiler suit with an ostrich wrap around my neck and hobnail boots. But if I'm acting, I sometimes have to wear clothes that make me look ridiculous. Right, now, there's two main sorts of acting. Right, there's the method school of acting, and that's where you imagine you are whoever you're portraying. It could be anything. You could even imagine that you're a horse. And, there's the rhythm method school of acting. Now, that's where you still pretend you're a horse, but you don't get ridden as often. Why are you laughing? Boy, is that rude? Oh, flipping heck, I bet it is. Is that Ted Bovis? He told me to say that I'll kill him when I get hold of him. Howdy ho!
Miss Sue Pollard, ladies and gentlemen, who in a recent television popularity poll came immediately after a trough of low pressure in the weather forecast. Now, back to the ascites.
Are you Arthur Penge, alias Albert Penge, alias Albert Pentworth, alias Patrick Pentworth?
Yeah, but I'm also known as Arthur Penge, alias Albert Pentworth, alias Patrick Pentworth, alias Patrick Pyle, alias Patrick Piles, alias Horace Hemorrhoids, alias Arthur Hemorrhoids, for short.
Mr. Penge, this is a court of law, so kindly don't treat it as if it were a music hall.
I say. Did you hear the one about a man who walked underneath a ruptured elephant? He said he'd recently been under a big strain. Boom!
Mr. Penge, any more of that sort of behaviour and I will deal with you most severely.
What do I care? Going to send me down anyway.
Be that as it may. Proceed, Madam Prosecutor.
Malone. Mr. Penge, can you remember what happened on the ninth day of March last?
Very clearly. Because that was one of the days when I imagined I was John Cleese.
You imagined you were John Cleese, Mr. Penge?
Evidently it is a malady the accused suffers from, my lad. So, Mr. Penge, if I can take you back to the day in question, perhaps you can tell the court precisely what happened.
Right. Well, I gone into this pet shop and,
Yes, sir, what can I do for you?
I've called to complain about this parrot, which I bought from this very emporium only yesterday.
But that's a tortoise, sir.
I'm sorry, I appear to be doing the wrong sketch. I'll start again. I've called to complain about this tortoise, which I bought from this very emporium only yesterday.
What's wrong with it, then?
What's wrong with it? I'll tell you what's wrong with it. It hasn't got a head. That's what's wrong with it. This tortoise is headless.
No. No, tortoises are like that, sir. You'll find that quite often retract their heads into their shell like that.
Quite possibly. However, this tortoise has not got a head to retract into its shell.
Oh, I think you'll find it has, sir. Yes, it'll pop its little head out sooner or later, you'll see.
No, it will not, my good man.
Well, I think you'll find it will, sir, in the fullness of time.
In the fullness of time? This tortoise would not pop its head out in the fullness of time if the man from Dino Rod was at the other end.
Oh, I assure you it will, sir. What are you feeding it on?
I'm not feeding it on anything, am I?
Well, there you are. I mean, you can hardly expect it to pop its head out if you're not putting any food down for it now, can you?
I am not putting any food down for it because it has not got a head with which to eat it.
Oh, it has. It's got a head, all right, like I say.
Look, my man, I have poked around in there with my finger and there is nothing in there. This beast is devoid of a head.
Oh, I'd be careful about putting my finger in there if I were you. It'd give you a very nasty bite.
It has got nothing with which to bite me.
Oh, well, I mean, I didn't guarantee that it had teeth, did I? Just a head.
It has not got a head.
Yes, it has.
Look, matey boy. I have taken the liberty of taking this tortoise to the local hospital where I have had it x-rayed. I have just seen the x-ray photographs and there is no head in there.
Oh, well. It is, of course, a well-known fact that it is quite impossible to x-ray the heads of tortoises. It just can't be done.
I bet its head didn't show up on the photograph, did it?
Its head didn't show up in the photograph because it hasn't got a head! A head it has not got! This tortoise is minus a noggin. It is without a bonce. It has not got a napper. It is deficient of a dome. It is bereft of somewhere to put its hat. It has lost its head. It is out of its skull. It is shy of the thing that sits on its shoulders. You would not find a head on it if you search from now until kingdom come. This is a headless tortoise.
How will it be if I knock a bit off?
But it's got a bit knocked off, hasn't it? It's got the head knocked off, hasn't it?
I mean, if I knocked you a bit off the price.
I do not want a bit knocking off the price. I want a proper tortoise, a tortoise with a head on it.
Headless tortoises are becoming quite popular these days, you know.
Not with me, they're not, so kindly exchange it.
Oh, if you insist, sir. Right then, there you are. One tortoise with a head.
Where's its legs?
Well, it's retracted them into...
No, no, it has not. Anyway, it isn't a tortoise. It's a meat pie with a tortoise's head stuck on it.
No, no, tortoises look very much like meat pies, sir.
Yes, they do not, however, have gravy running out of the bottom of them.
That's not gravy. It's... Well, it hasn't been house-trained yet.
It's a meat pie with a tortoise's head stuck on it.
Well, how will it be if I give you this head for your headless tortoise, then?
Yes, all right, then.
Right. Well, I'll just stick it on for you, then.
No, 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 no. You've no need to do that. I'll eat it now. Yummy. You can't beat a nice, crunchy tortoise head, I would say.
Madam Prosecutor, that was all very interesting, I'm sure, but I fail to see what it has to do with this case.
It will become clear, my lord. Mr. Penge, when you left the pet shop, what happened?
Oi, what's he doing?
Oh, he's the court artist. He's drawing you.
Well, me? Can I have a look? Oh,
show him, please, Mr. Parker. When you left the pet shop, what happened to the car that you had left outside?
You got my nose a bit big, didn't you?
He what?
I said, you've drawn my nose a bit big. I mean, my nose is nowhere near as big as that.
Are you trying to tell me my job?
No, I'm just saying you draw my nose too big, so would you kindly alter it?
Certainly not.
Why not? I mean, you're just sitting there with
a... Answer the question, please, Mr. Penge.
Yeah, but he's drawn my...
Answer the question, Mr. Penge.
But he's drawn my nose too big, Your Worship.
The court is not interested in your nose, Mr. Penge, so answer...
Well, I'm interested in my nose. I've got a nice nose. He saw me with a big nose.
But you have got a big nose, Mr. Penge.
Who's got a big nose?
You have. Now, if you can answer the question...
Well, I have not got a big nose.
But you have, Mr. Penge.
Well, at least I ain't got bandy legs like you.
What did you say?
I said you've got bandy legs.
Who's got bandy legs?
You have. I bet you when you hang your tights on a washing line, it looks like a row of life belts.
I have not got bandy legs.
Oh, come on, Madam Prosecutor. Of course you've got bandy legs.
Who asked for your opinion?
It's not an opinion, it's a fact. I've seen you out horse riding. You have to sew Velcro on the inside of your jumpers so when the horse gets off, it doesn't leave you behind.
Well, at least I don't wear a toupee.
I do not wear a toupee.
Really? It's plain for all the world to see that you wear a brucey. It's one of the most obvious toupees I've ever laughed at.
I do not wear a toupee.
Well, it certainly looks to me like you're wearing a toupee.
Who asked you, Big Nose?
Yeah, you keep out of it. Big Nose, this is between me and Baldy.
Don't you call me Baldy, you bandy-legged bint.
Baldy?
Yeah, Baldy.
Big Nose.
Big Nose.
Bandy.
Order in court. Order, this is an outrage. In all my years of judging, I have never witnessed such childish behaviour. And for what reason? Simply because you're all so conceited that you can't admit that you have any physical abnormalities. But what difference does it make if you have? What does it matter if the defendant has a big nose, or if the court artist is bald, or if the prosecutor has bandy legs?
Or if the judge has a little willy.
Or if the judge has... I have not got a little willy.
Well, my fellow barristers say you have.
I have not got a little willy. Oh, come on, Judge. Everybody knows you have. If it was any smaller, you'd be known as Justice Gooley.
Order! Court!
Perhaps...
Order!
I could bring some sanity to the proceedings by introducing this recording into the evidence, my lord. It proves beyond doubt that the defendant was in the vicinity of the crime, the borough of Brent, on the night in question.
Why did it?
It was recorded at Brent Town Hall, where the defendant was in the corner with his boxer, Boy Gelding, during Gelding's fight with Killer Grogan, as you will now hear.
Oh, great, boy, you're doing just great.
Hey, Dad.
Look,
Look at me, boy. Look. Boy. Boy. How many fingers am I holding up?
What, Mr. Payne?
How many fingers am I holding up? Look at my hand, boy.
What hand?
You're doing great, boy. Just great. Killer Grogan hasn't laid a glove on you yet.
Oh, so it's the ref what's knocking seven sorts out of me, is it? How many more runs are there?
Only another 14. But you'll have soon seen Grogan off long before then, boy.
What, seen him off? Have you seen the size of him?
Oh, the bigger they are, the harder they fall.
The bigger they are, the harder they hit me.
Boy, have I ever let anybody hurt you, boy? I mean, have I ever done that? Have I let so much as a single person hurt you?
Yeah, you let Battling Harris hurt me, and Chopper Carlson.
All I know...
And Kid Mango, you let Kid Mango nearly kill me. And Sailor Bruish, you let him hurt me as well. And Rocky Romano.
Yeah, all I know
and
is...
And Bomber Bonds, and Fighting Ichari, that Filipino.
Yeah, all I know is, boy, that you've had over 100 fights, and you've still got all your own teeth.
Yeah, only because you picked them all up off the canvas.
You are a contender, boy. You could go all the way.
I know, all the way to the hospital. Anyway, look, if I get into trouble in the next round, I want you to throw the towel in.
Throw the towel in? How can you even consider such a thing, boy? You just aren't thinking, are you? Thinking about your kid sister. Your poor little kid sister who is blind in one eye. And almost blind in the other. Because if you don't win this fight tonight, boy, that's it.
Yeah, but...
Because only if you win tonight can you raise enough money to pay for the operation which will save the sight of your poor little kid sister. You think about that, boy.
Well, can't she have a guide dog or something?
Am I hearing right, boy?
Look, I'll tell you what, so she'd be able to get around him faster, we'll get her a guide greyhound. You run greyhounds, don't you?
That wasn't you saying that, boy. That wasn't you saying we should get your poor kid sister a guide dog.
Yeah, it was. Look, watch my mouth, I'll say it again. Why can't she have a guide dog?
Boy, no, give me that towel.
Look, if she wants the money for an operation all that much, why don't she come here and fight that big heap over there herself?
Now, you know, she can't do that, don't you, boy?
Why not?
Because I've got a wrestling big daddy at the Royal Albert Hall.
Pretty conclusive evidence, I think you'll agree, my lad.
Possibly. However, I will have to consult my learned friend. What did you think of the evidence recorded on that tape?
I'm not sure. Play it again.
Pardon?
You heard me. Play it again, Sam.
Sure thing, Rick.
Of all the joints in all the world, I had to end up in this one. But let's face it. This isn't the first court of law I've ever been in, and that's a fact.
You have been listening to Star Trek 2, starring Christopher Godwin, Jeffrey Holland, Susie Blake, and Fred Harris.
I mean, the Department of Justice and old Rick have never exactly seen eye to eye, if you know what I mean. In fact, you're looking at a guy who's been condemned more times than the meat in the hamburger factory.
The show was written by Terry Ravenscroft.
The truth is that I'm still a wanted man, a fugitive from the law. That's why I'm dressed in a duvet. It's my cover.
And produced by Martin Fisher.
Here's looking at you, Martin.